Hello, everyone, and happy Sunday evening. Welcome to the 7 Steps to Awakening. And as I think you know, tonight, after the 7 Steps to Awakening, there will be also a member meeting. So I'll be here for a couple hours. And then, of course, I'm going to hang around and listen to Carol Howe as well. But I'll be on the mic for a couple hours. So I have plenty of water here beside me. And I think it's probably nice that we start with a song. I know I like starting with music. I find music very inspirational, so hopefully you all feel the same way. Here's the song I wanted to look for. This song is called Why Walk When You Can Fly? And it's by a Christian band called One by One, but that's spelt W-O-N by O-N-E, One by One. So here we go. Why walk when you can fly?
In this world, there's a whole lot of trouble. In this world, there's a whole lot of pain. In this world, there's a whole lot of trouble, but a whole lot of ground to gain. Why take when you could be given? Why watch as the world goes by? It's a hard enough life to be living. Why walk when you can fly?
Why walk when you can fly?
Oh.
Why walk when you can fly?
Why walk?
Why walk when you can fly?
Oh,
oh, why?
In this world there's a whole lot of sorrow. In this world there's a whole lot of shame.
Welcome to the 7 Steps to Awakening, and we are going to begin tonight with quote 760. And there's the link for anyone who likes to follow along in the journal. Quote 760 from the Yoga Vashista. I think it's kind of fun to say that, by the way. Yoga Vashista. It's kind of like Srinivasa Gadada Maharaj. That's a lot of fun to say, too. So quote number 760 from the Yoga Vashista. They are tempted away from the path of order and wisdom by their own vanities and desires. And, you know, of course, we can assume what they means, but we don't have to, because actually I think quote 759, which we went over last week, tells us what they means. So let me just go back and read 759 for you real quick, and then we'll go back to 760. I think they probably go together. Human beings, that's the they. Human beings are narrow-minded and petty-minded, interested in the trivia of life, They spend most of their time in pursuit of evil desires. And so we went over that quote at the end of last week. So 760 then says, they, meaning human beings, are tempted away from the path of order and wisdom by their own vanities and desires. And, you know, it's funny because I have a, you know, I have a few favorite teachers that I like to listen to, of course. Probably everyone does. And two of those teachers are Michael Langford and Elie Ruzdahr, which I know you guys probably don't find as a surprise. And last, I think it was March, April, and May, if I remember correctly. In March, I think Lynn interviewed Elie Ruzdahr. Then April, I was able to go and interview Michael Langford. And then I think in May, maybe it was May, I interviewed Elie Ruzdahr. So March, April, and May, we had a whole lot of Elie Ruzdahr and Michael Langford here. And I remember not everyone was excited about them as I was, primarily because in one sense we could say that Michael and Elie are both kind of strict. And the way in which they're strict is that they don't say, oh yeah, everything on the spiritual path is really helping you to awaken. Oh yeah, everybody, you know, who perceives himself on the spiritual path is on the spiritual path. Oh yeah, it's all moving in the same direction. They don't say that. In fact, what both Michael and Elie say is that actually very, very few people are genuinely on the spiritual path. And very, very few people are going to awaken, or as Michael would say, achieve Manonasa in this lifetime. And I think that, you know, many people found that offensive. And my guess for why they found it offensive is because the way the ego mind heard that was, you aren't good enough to make it, right? You know, like I'm pointing right at you. You aren't good enough to make it. And actually, neither Michael nor Elie said, you aren't good enough to make it. I'll tell you how my mind heard it, and I suspect that my mind heard it through the right mind. And so if we listen to what Regina's mind heard, I suspect we're listening to the right-minded interpretation of that very strict message. What I heard was, if you want this, you have to give it your all. That's what I heard. If you really want this, you have to give it your all. Just a simple statement of truth, I think. And what we hear the Yoga Vasishtha saying here is really the same thing. Human beings, right? This is the exact same message that we got from Michael and Elie. Human beings are tempted away from the path of order and wisdom by their own vanities and desires. In other words, we're, I hear two things here. Vanities. I'll tell you what I hear in vanities. I don't hear, you remember that song, You're So Vain? Right? You're so vain. What was that song? Something about you walk by the mirror and you look in the mirror and, you know, you love yourself. I don't remember the exact words, but there's this idea of looking in the mirror and being really impressed with yourself. And, you know, the song is singing to a man, so you imagine that every girl here wants to dance with you. You're so vain. I don't think this is exactly what vanities means. Yeah, you probably think the song is about you. It's a fun song. If we end up with a little extra time, maybe we'll find it and play it. That's a fun song. But I don't think that's exactly what vanities here means, because most of us are not... Well, maybe on some days we're that vain. Probably all of us on some days are that vain, but maybe not on all days. Oh, your husband is singing the song, huh? Maybe not on all days. So I don't think that's what the vanity means here. When it says they are tempted away from the path of order and wisdom by their own vanities, what I really think vanity means is our attraction to ourself. And that attraction may not be the type of attraction where you look in the mirror and you think you're so beautiful and you think everybody wants to be with you, right? It might not be that type of attraction, at least not every day. It's more just the attraction to whatever the mind is saying right now. You know, whatever problems, worries, judgments, grievances, future wishes and dreams, you know, maybe how gorgeous I am and how everybody wants to be with me, how smart I am, how better I am than others. But it could also be how dumb I am, you know, how much everybody's better than me. It doesn't really matter the quality of the thought as much as the me in the thought. Me and mine, because I could also be thinking about my family, right? My dog, my house, my job, my company, even my sports team. I've seen a lot of my sports team lately, I guess with basketball finals happening. You know, so yeah, vanity is thinking about me and mine. And so what this is saying is that we are, human beings, are more interested in thinking about me and mine than focusing on truth. And you know, if any of us are at all honest, we have to see that's true, don't we? It's what I call a wake-up call, not an insult, a wake-up call. Do you want this? Because right now, the way you are going, even though you think you're on a spiritual path, right? This is what Michael and Ellie, they might both use similar types of ideas. Even though you think you're on a spiritual path, you're not. You're still spending 98% of your time with vanities, thinking about me and mine. And then the other thing that this particular quote says is desires. They are tempted away from the path of order and wisdom by their own vanities and desires. And you know, maybe I'll quit picking on Ellie and Michael for a moment. I might go back to them though, because I'm actually very inspired by both of them and their strictness. But even if you look at NTI, so maybe we can blame Regina Don Akers here, because NTI came through her. She allowed that book to come through. And if you're looking at NTI, Luke, it talks about how we need to be focused on the single thought of God. The single thought of God. And it also talks a lot, there's a lot in NTI about that true desire. About how important that true desire, and that true desire is to know thyself, and how important that is, and how that desire needs to increase and grow and increase and grow. And of course we know Michael Langford and Ellie Ruzdar talk about how important that desire is, how much you have to want it. It has to be the only thing that you want. Hear that? Only thing. Singular thought of God. How many humans, even if they're on a spiritual path, can honestly say, the only thing I want is awakening? We may say, I want awakening, but we may also say, but I want, you know, I want my health. I want my children to be safe. I want, you know, enough money so that I feel secure. I want a new truck. Whatever, you know. My boyfriend's shopping for a truck right now, so that's where that one came from. We were looking at trucks all afternoon today. I want a new truck so I can pull my 57 Chevy to car shows, right? I want, I want, I want. So that strict message, the way Regina hears it, I don't hear it as an insult. I don't hear it as you're not good enough. I hear it as you need to continually up your game. continually up your game. Until the only thing that you really think about is awakening. The only thing that you want with every cell in your body is awakening. Keep up in your game. And focus on that, right? Make that a priority. Make upping your game, I don't know where that term came from, but make upping your game a priority for you. Focus on it. Increase your desire for liberation. And I see Kathy's hand, so Kathy, the mic is yours.
Regina, what you're saying right here, I'm one of those people that when I first met Michael Langford and first heard Elie Ruzdahr, felt like, wow, you know, the astronomical numbers that were printed about, you know, how many people reach Mananasa, for instance. It was like a slap in the face. It felt like a slap in the face. It felt like, wow, I don't possibly have a chance. I don't possibly have a chance. That's how I interpreted that. And Elie Ruzdahr, for me, I wouldn't call it a gentle healing, a gentle, consistent healing type of message. Although I have to say, it goes perfectly with Michael Langford's message. And what I've come to realize in just being open to what is being shared there, it's being shared for a purpose because it is, at least for me, very easy to be distracted by things that I might value more than this right now, what seems to be just a notion of what is possible, what the miracle is, what awakening is, what any of this is. And there's enough of a piece of me, a strong enough piece of me, that really can't turn back. But I have to say that I still do experience maybe sadness when I see those kinds of things printed, because it's like, wow, I mean, it almost feels impossible. And it is impossible with the ego as my guide. So giving over full measure still feels scary to me. And yeah, I'll just give up the mic with that. Thanks for letting me share.
Yeah, thank you. Let me just comment on Kathy and then I'll hand it over to Sharon. And, you know, I feel you. You know, I feel you. Interestingly today, our workbook lesson is workbook lesson 77. I am entitled to miracles. And what that workbook lesson says to me is that when our mind is expressing these ideas, that I'm not good enough, it won't happen to me, that's the liar. That's the liar. And of course, a part of what we're here to do is to learn not to listen to the liar. Right? I love what Tess Hughes said. And look how normal Tess Hughes is, right? Look how normal and everyday Tess Hughes is. And Tess Hughes said, you have to believe this is possible for you. Right? You have to believe this is possible for you. And part of that, I would say, is the motivating factor. You know, again, Michael and Elie are asking us to up our game, and I think they're doing it out of love. right? Out of love, they're telling us what's required. For sure, Kathy says. But we will listen to them better if we also listen to Tess Hughes, who says you have to believe it's possible for you. We'll most likely not listen to them, not listen to Mike and Ellie, and maybe even have a grievance against Mike and Ellie if we listen to the ego, which says, you know, you aren't good enough to do this. It's not going to happen for you. So I think we listen to Tess first. It's possible for us. And then with that perspective, with that attitude, this is possible for me, then we listen to Michael and Ellie, okay, what's required? And they say, keep upping your game. And so day by day, I up my game. You know, every day I up my game. And to be honest, the Gentle Healing Group is doing that. Day by day, we up our game with the Gentle Healing Group. It's intentional. It's intentional, right? That's not an accident. The Gentle Healing Group, if you stick with the Gentle Healing Group all of the way, you will probably eventually be practicing awareness, watching awareness for at least 2 hours a day. Not very, very soon. Don't worry. It is gentle and it is slow. But we're upping our game. The Gentle Healing Group is not intended as just another spiritual entertainment. It's intended to move us in that direction of awakening in a very consistent way where we can, you know, do it a little more each day. And, you know, again, I said that today our workbook lesson is Lesson 77, I Am Entitled to Miracles. I think that this lesson points in this exact same direction. Because remember, this lesson said, let me see if I can find it. I don't have my underlined version down here. It's upstairs. Well, of course, it says things like, you cannot fail to be assured in this. You are but asking that the will of God be done. But that isn't the line I was looking for. Says you will receive the assurance you seek. But that still isn't what I was looking for. I don't think I can find it since my underlines are upstairs. But basically there was something in this lesson that asked us today to be confident. It asked us not to doubt ourselves today, right? That really means listen to Tess Hughes. I trust this is possible for me. I may have to up my game. And it may be easiest for me to up my game little by little. But this is possible for me. All right, Sharon, the mic is yours. Sharon, you do not have the mic yet. Do you want to try again?
This wasn't working. Hi. You know, Regina, I am, you know, hi. I'm confused a lot lately. You know, I read a lot of Sailor Bob. That's just what I'm drawn to, and I got to trust my guidance. And he doesn't say, unless the ego in me is hearing it differently, he's not saying what they're saying. He's basically saying that everything's an appearance and we're all awake already. I understand what you're teaching, because the I is the problem. You know, the sense of I is the problem. I mean, for me, I have gone through a very rough weekend, and, you know, I'm not in a place where, you know, I know that I can boast and say, oh, I'm really, really advanced. It's just not, that doesn't come from me. And, you know, there's some struggles, very big struggles keep unfolding in my son's life, and I can't be alone. It hurts like hell. And let's just stay on point with Sailor Bob. He, you know, I spoke to one of his, a couple of his students, and that's not what he's saying. He's saying that we're awake and the ayah falls away when you see, when you stay in that, in non-conceptual awareness. So I guess maybe it is, you know, mananasa. You know, I think that, you know, Ellie Roostar and Michael Langford, you know, might be awakened. I don't know, because I'm not awake. You know, I listen to Chris Lean and I feel her. So we're all going to be drawn to different people. I mean, this is really a personal process. And I have to say that I don't say I'm on a spiritual path. I'm living life. But I'm a little confused about, Sailor Bob talks about that we've never been the doer in any of this. Not ever. And I've heard that in MTI. So how do we, as a human being, awaken? Isn't it really up to spirit to awaken us? And explain to me, please, about if we're never been the doer. He says life essence is putting on the show. Now, I have a lot of respect for him because he came from Niskarada Maharaj. You know, and so I'm a little, you know, I wasn't drawn. I like Michael's books, but I wasn't drawn to him as of yet. Ellie, she didn't, you know, impress me much at all. You know, I'm not, Tess Hughes does. Yes, she's very soft. Byron Katie, there's no doubt in my mind, I just feel her. Okay, so this is coming from me. Someone who is really in the ego more than I would want to be, you know. And obviously, you know, there's a lot of things that need to still be healed. Because I have an attachment. I have a boundary issue with my children. I really become affected by my son's disease. So if I don't awaken in this lifetime, and by the way, I don't even know if there's another lifetime. I question that as being another thought. I question the mind showing other pictures. It's tricky. So my big thing is I really don't know. It's so unknown to me. But if you can explain, if we're not the doer, then who awakens? Because there's no separate self. This is what I'm reading in several of Bob's books. And you know, he's one of the eldest sages around. Now, did I see Michael arrogant? No. Or Ellie arrogant? No. I didn't see them. And I'm sure it's coming from love. But Michael never had a family. And so, you know, maybe the doer, whoever's doing this, chose Michael as, you know, a character in the oneness that you explained to me to wake up. And maybe that's true for Ellie, and maybe it's not true for me, but I enjoy, this soothes my soul. This gives me comfort. I'm still in the 12 steps too. You know? So, and I love you. I absolutely love you. I just find that you've been one of the best people in my life since I met you online. So just the thing that I was going to write you, like if we're not the doer, yes, I guess we can put the intention out there to win. And yes, it's possible. But who is saying that? Isn't it the ego that would be saying that? See, that's my confusion. And, you know, I know that, you know, you're authentic. I feel you. I'm not saying Michael, now you aren't authentic. I just feel you. I feel you're honest. You're so honest. There you are, and love that about you. You know, there's several people there that might, you know, say something different. My friend just came back from Byron Katie. Byron Katie has a whole different way of teaching. She basically is saying there is nothing really happening here. It's an appearance. And, of course, you know that more than I do. The emotional body is really painful, Virginia, and I'm trying. I listen to you over in NTI, and I'm doing the best I can. But like Kathy, you know, I still have the I am bad thought. I don't know that Kathy does, but I see that in me. I see it coming out. I think people are mad at me. I still fall back, you know. And this, the screwed it up in me, my fault. So just plainly, who is awakened when there's, you know, like when you spoke about awakening, I don't get it. You know, the doer is doing it all, or I'm not, maybe I just can't comprehend it right. Thank you for giving me this time, and I love you truly.
Thank you, Sharon. I love you truly, too. So, yeah, I will answer to the best of my ability. And what I'm not going to give you is any, you know, any non-dual, you know, talk, you know, like, oh, you know, well, there is no doer and blah, blah, blah. I'm not going to give you that. I'm going to talk to you directly from what my current experience is. All right? My current experience is that there are what we could call two possibilities within me still. I think A Course in Miracles calls this the split mind. There are two possibilities within me. And it appears that I have the ability to choose between those two possibilities. Now, there may have been an earlier time in my life. In fact, you know, there was an earlier time in my life when it didn't appear there were two possibilities. There was only one. You know, there was a time in my life when the only possibility for me was ego. There was no call. There was no anything to move into the direction of awakening. There was just ego, you know. I could be a happy ego, an unhappy ego, a selfish ego, a generous ego, you know, but there was just ego. And then somewhere along the way, this other possibility opened up. Now, where did that other possibility come from? You know, can we say that Regina sought out the other possibility? No, we can't. We can't. The other possibility called to me. The other possibility began to pull me in its direction. So if I was to say that, you know, I did it, I made a decision to begin this spiritual path, that would not be true. In fact, if you listen to the song, I love the song by Jesus in Jesus Christ Superstar when he's in the Garden of Gethsemane, and he's getting really mad at God in this song because, you know, he's about to go to the crucifixion. He's getting really mad at God. You know, I did so much for you for 3 years and now you want this. And then suddenly in the song, he realizes, wait a minute. I didn't do this. I didn't start this is the way he words it. I didn't start this. You did. You know, there was something about you, God, that started pulling me in. I didn't start it. You did. But what it feels like, even in the process of being pulled in, right? The pulling in is happening. I didn't start it. But what it feels like is that I still have the ability to give my attention to that which is pulling me in. Or give my attention to the ego because it's still here. It feels like there are two possibilities. Where once upon a time there was only one. And so it seems like when I listen to Michael Langford and Ellie Ruzdar, what I hear them saying is to give more and more and more of my attention to what's pulling me in. Give more and more of my attention to that. And then what I feel is, as I give more and more attention to that, trust that. Trust that. You know, like one thing that is happening for me, which is an absolute miracle. I am entitled to miracles, and this is a miracle, is I am spending longer and longer periods of time in meditation. And it was 2 years ago, I could only meditate for 10 minutes at best, and it was a lazy meditation, and I fell asleep, and I started dreaming about purple elephants or whatever, and that was it. And I was a little frustrated because Ellie, you know, I wasn't in as much communication with Michael then, and Ellie wanted me to meditate. Ellie said I had to meditate, and I'm like, I can't meditate, you know? She's asking me to do something I can't, and I was frustrated. Maybe this is why in stepped Michael. Because even though I trusted Ellie, right, Michael showed up. He sent me an email. Maybe I'll find that email sometime and share it with you all. He sent me an email with some quotes in it that helped to motivate me. And in addition to those quotes, he gave me a new method of meditation, at least it was new to me, called the Loving Consciousness Method, which had to do with looking at awareness and loving it, cherishing it, worshiping it, honoring it. And I found that helpful. That somehow increased my ability to go with the pull, with the gravity. And I don't know if it's the difference between the masculine and the feminine. You know, a masculine person might say, I'm getting better and better at meditation. I feel like, it's not that I feel like I'm conquering meditation. I feel like as I give my willingness to meditation and I give my honest attempts at loving consciousness, loving awareness, wanting to know about it, I feel like it's pulling me in. So in that way, I'm not the doer. I'm making myself available. I'm choosing to listen to the guidance that's making me available to it. To it. You know, and Ellie talks a lot about that. Like if you go back and you listen to Ellie, she talks about these experiences, this love affair that she had with it, right? Whatever you call it, you know, I think she calls it this. With this. And she even talks about how for a long time it felt like a personal love affair. You know, she didn't realize that it wasn't a personal love affair. But something just keeps pulling in. You know, and Ramana Maharshi talks about the heart as a magnet. So in that way, I'm not the doer. I'm the empty shell. I'm the one making myself available. I'm the one saying yes. I'm the one sitting still and closing my eyes and letting it pull me in. But you know, I also still have that other voice that wants me to focus on it. And so it feels like, and I can only say what it feels like a conscious choice when the other voice is saying, well, maybe we should do this first and do this first and do this first, to say, no, I'll meditate first. And I'll meditate for as long as I meditate today. And then those other things will still be waiting. You know, the only thing that I do on an average day, of course, there are occasional, you know, days where it has to be different. But the only thing that I do on an average day now before I meditate, because of the Gentle Healing Group, I do the workbook lesson and I write my tip. And one reason I write my tip is I'm actually contemplating the lesson while I'm writing the tip, but also I'm in the mountain zone and some people are 2 hours ahead of me over there on the East Coast. So I kind of feel like, you know, I want to get that tip out as early as possible. So I do the workbook lesson. I write my tip. I brush my teeth. It feels good for me to go meditate with my teeth brushed. So I brush my teeth. Get a nice drink of water so I'm not dry. If the stomach is rumbling, I'll get a little something to eat. If it's not, I won't. And then I meditate. I don't get dressed. I don't shower. I don't do anything else. Because there's something about the ego where it would add this, and then it would add this, and then it would add this. And pretty soon, I'd be in the part of the day that I call the business part of the day where, you know, people are wanting my attention and meditation just got squeezed out. And pretty soon it's noon. And it does feel like, and maybe when I awaken, I'll tell you, oh, guess what? There was no doer. But it does feel like I need to make that decision. And, you know, you talked about how Sailor Bob followed Nisargadatta. Well, I don't know Sailor Bob, so I cannot comment on Sailor Bob. That would just be me making stuff up. But I know Nisargadatta pretty well. And I hear Nisargadatta recommending earnestness, which to me is the same as vigilance in A Course in Miracles, more than any other recommendation that he makes. And in fact, he says that what he credits his awakening with is the fact that his teacher, told him to just focus on the I am to the exclusion of everything else, and he believed him. And so he did it, right? He made a decision. Now, he still had to go to work. He still had a family, so he did have some other responsibilities. He did not sit in meditation 12 hours a day like Michael Langford did. Ellie Ruser, I think she said she was about 3 hours a day, right? She was also married with children, right? And I don't know how many hours a day Nisargadatta did it. I've never seen it written down, but, you know, maybe it was in the morning before work and in the evening after work. That's the way I imagine it. So I'm going to imagine 4 to 5 hours a day for him, but I don't know for sure. I'm imagining. Let's be clear about that. But, you know, he had stuff he had to do, right? But he made that choice to make meditation his priority. And that's the same choice he recommends in his teachings over and over and over again. And in fact, one of my favorite quotes from him, which I, again, don't have at my fingertips, but he recommends, you know, enduring all delays and disappointments. And maybe I can remember it. Enduring all delays and disappointments until the mind turns around. In other words, if you sit down and you close your eyes and it feels like nothing happened today, but I said you're listening to mind, that's okay. Meditate again tomorrow. You know, there may be days that in the mind feel like good days to the mind and days that feel like bad days to the mind where the meditation wasn't that good. That's okay. Do it anyway. In fact, isn't our quote today something like that? Let me see if I can find our Awakening Together quote for the day. I think it's very similar. Let's see, inspiration, daily quote. Okay, here's the daily quote for today. I don't know if I can say the name of the person it's from. It's a Buddhist person. Each step may seem to take forever, but no matter how uninspired you feel, continue to follow your practice schedule precisely and consistently. This is how we can use our greatest enemy, habit, against itself. Right? That's the way I hear Nisargadatta Maharaj. Yes, I would say meditation is more important than reading. Absolutely. What I would say reading is really good for is inspiring us to meditate. Reading can be the inspiration. You know, when I do the course workbook first, that wakes me up and opens my heart, and then I'm ready to go meditate. You know, that was my inspiration, right? So, you know, when people come along and say you're not the doer, I mean, maybe that is the truth. And maybe when we are awakened, we'll go say, yeah, that's the truth. But right now, in my current experience, I can see how I could use that as an excuse not to be earnest, not to be vigilant, not to practice. And I don't see how that's helpful. So there you, that's the way I see it. Wasn't there a newscaster who used to end the show that way? Like, that's the way I see it or something? That sounded very familiar to me when I said that. Like I stole somebody else's line. That's the way I see it. And I'll tell you another one of the, I don't know if I can find those quotes that Michael sent me. I might be able to find them really quickly. I actually, every single email that Michael sends me, I keep. Every one of them. And maybe if I search my hard drive, they're all in the same folder, but I mean, maybe if I do a by date search, this would have been one of the earlier emails he ever sent me. Maybe I can find it, and maybe I can share with you some of the quotes that he shared with me that were helpful to get me started on meditation. Let's see. I don't know if this is it or not, but I'm going to open this up. Nope. That's not it. That's not it. I'll try one more time, and then I'll give up because I don't want to spend too much time here looking for a document that I may or may not be able to find quickly. Let's see, here is Michael Langford. It is in reverse order. Oh, no, it's not. It's in alphabetical order. That's why I'm not finding it. Let's try reverse order here. That's why it's just the first couple, even in alphabetical order, the first couple happened to be from a long time ago, but it wasn't in order. So let's try this again. Okay, here's two emails. I wonder if I can open them both. Let's see if I can open them both. I think that it might be one of these two. Okay, yep, here we go. He says, look at these two Annamalai Swami quotes from the Seven Steps to Awakening. Quote number 923, don't be discouraged by the length of the journey and don't slacken in your efforts to get home. Doesn't that sound a lot like today's Awakening Together quote? Let me read these quotes together. Don't be discouraged by the length of the journey and don't slacken in your efforts to get home. This is today's Awakening Together quote. Each step may seem to take forever, but no matter how uninspired you feel, continue to follow your practice schedule precisely and consistently. This is how we can use our greatest enemy, habit, against itself. And then another quote that he sent me that really helped me. Don't waste energy on thinking or evaluating how well or how badly you are doing in your meditation. And that was really helpful because I'll tell you what, my mind, especially in the beginning, I mean, I was meditating very short periods of times and really struggling to be at all awake. You know, like I just wanted to go to sleep. In fact, I think I told Ellie Ruzdar that one of my talents in this lifetime is sleeping. I close my eyes and I go to sleep, you know. So I wanted to, what my mind wanted to do was say, Regina, you just can't do this. You'll never be able to do this, right? That's what my mind wanted to say. And so this quote really helped me with that. Don't waste energy on thinking or evaluating how well or how badly you are doing in your meditation, right? Just do it. Just do it. Yeah. Here are some instructions that Michael wrote to me. This was prior to him writing How to Live a Life That Knows Only Love. That book didn't exist yet, so those instructions in that book form were not available yet. So he sent me a few instructions to help me prior to the book. Here are the instructions. Number one, he's talking about the loving consciousness method of meditation. He says the loving consciousness method is a primary method of meditation. And here's what it can do. Number one, it can take you all the way home to the end of the illusion and to living eternally in infinite awareness, love, bliss. And by the way, people use the word awakening differently. When I use the word awakening, this is a pretty good description of what I mean. All the way home, right? And you know, in A Course in Miracles, it talks about the real world and it talks about heaven, and they aren't the same thing, right? The real world, we could call, is a type of awakening. It's a major shift. And sometimes I think many people awaken to the real world. Right? But then after awakening to the real world, there's what we could call another step, which the Course calls heaven, you know, which Michael calls Manonasa, which I might call all the way home. Right? So the loving consciousness method can take you all the way home to the end of the illusion and to living eternally in infinite awareness, love, bliss. Number two, it should be practiced every day. Number three, If a time comes in the future when you can free up more time for practice, that will be good. However, you can gradually build up to that over time. And I was so happy to hear him say that because, you know, in his books, he recommends at least 2 hours a day. And again, this is a period of time when I was having trouble with 20 minutes. So, yay! I practice every day. I do my best. I don't judge it. And I gradually build up. That sounded like heaven to me, right? Yay. Because if I had to sit down and do it for 2 hours at that period of time, I would have just felt like a failure, right? I just can't. It's like I said when I finished with Ellie Ruser, but I can't do that, you know? So if that's what's required, then I'm not good enough, you know? I did have that feeling the first time I talked to her. So again, if a time comes in the future when you can free up more time for practice, that will be good. He does have a very gentle side to him. However, you can gradually build up to that over time. And then because this method leads you all the way home, you can practice it for the rest of your life and for however many years you want to continue. He says, or forever. Sorry. Because this method leads all the way home, you can practice it for the rest of your life or for however many years you want to continue it. And again, I've been doing this now, and I have to admit, off and on, you know, I had starts and stops. So I've been doing this now. I started, it was in May of 2015, you know, around the time when Michael sent me these instructions. And I started, you know, practicing with these instructions that I just read to you. And right now, I am in love with meditation, and I perceive meditation as a priority in my life. Now, there are days sometimes when I, you know, based on the day, like I do go to church with Awakening Together, and it does start at 8:15 a.m. And then I do have a family waiting as soon as church is over to spend Sunday with me. So Sundays I don't have as much time for meditation as I do on other days. But I get up early and I make sure that I get 35 minutes to an hour, even on a Sunday. Sunday for most days, most people, the weekdays are busier. For me, that's that Sunday morning. It's like, wow, it's really hard to get it in on Sundays. And, you know, my family has just accepted, I'm going to go downstairs and meditate now. Like, okay, that's what she does, you know. And my boyfriend bought me these wonderful noise counseling headphones. They're like $365 or something. So that, you know, the family doesn't have to be quiet while I'm meditating. You know, I can put on those noise counseling headphones, and they can move around and do whatever they're doing. You know, it's all working out. It's all working together. And it's all working together because, remember, that intense desire for liberation brings you everything you need. And if you need noise-canceling headphones, your boyfriend will buy you noise-canceling headphones so you can meditate. What a sweet guy. He doesn't even care about this stuff, you know? So that's a long way of saying, I don't know for sure if there's a doer or not, but where I am now, it feels like I need to make choices, and I'm making those choices because it's important to me. And again, the teachings that I look at, you know, Nisargadatta Maharaj, Ramana Maharshi, you know, Michael Langford, Ellie Ruzdar, and I, you know, he goes on with others as well, they do seem to recommend putting all of your attention on awakening. And even A Course in Miracles is all about making that choice. And I do not know why there would be so many good teachings asking us to make a choice if we didn't have a choice. All right, Kathy, the mic is yours.
I guess, for me, I've been struggling a bit with increasing my practice, and willingly so, really wanting to do that just because it feels good to me. It feels, it is the way I want to spend my time.
Yes.
At the same time, you know, I live with other people, and I have been getting pushback in particular from my daughter, in regards to the intensity of my practice, the time I've spent practicing. And she has been in very much judgment and disapproval, and letting me know that my spiritual practice seems more important to me than she is. And so I've been, you know, feeling all kinds of feels around that. And there is truth to that. I do, in fact, find my practice more rewarding than anything else. And at the same time, I notice the conditioning of motherhood, and also, once again, those feelings that I'm being disapproved of and told that I'm living in a bullshit reality. And so that feels hurtful in that mother role. And at the same time, I still know in the depth of my heart that that is not going to prevent me from dedicating myself more fully to whatever it takes to wake up to wake up from suffering. I simply just don't want to suffer anymore. I want to know the truth. I want to know who I am in truth. And I have to do what I'm being asked to do to make that happen. There is a piece of it in which I have to play my part. And so I'm wondering, you know, short of pissing people off and alienating my family, you know, my daughter in particular, I feel a bit confused about how to make that happen. So if you have any simple advice, I would appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, I do have simple advice. The simple advice is to let go of the mother role and let them worry about how they feel. That's my simple advice. You know, there have been a few times when my family has said things like that, and my response has always been, with a big smile on my face, God has to come first. You know, and that was the end of the discussion. And I think they've kind of shrugged their shoulders and accepted that. But what I think is happening there is, A, the mother role, that identification, and B, the desire not to disappoint them, not to, you know, it's an attachment to an outcome, I would call it. You know, Ron has not left me, which I perceive as a miracle, you know, considering in some ways we're so different. But I have always within myself given him permission to leave me. If at any point, you know, my attraction to the spiritual life is too much for him and he wants to leave, he already has that permission from me. If I was trying to cling to him, that would interfere with my spiritual practice. Now, when I'm with him, you know, it's almost like he has his time. He knows that this is his time. He gets Saturdays and Sunday afternoons with me, right? And when I'm with him, I give him 100% of my attention. I'm really, really with him. It's what we call quality time. But during the week, you know, I don't come upstairs from my office till 8 at night. You know, and that's because, of course, I spent so much time in the morning in spiritual practice, and then I did have work to do, and then there's a little bit more spiritual practice at night before I go upstairs. He doesn't really expect to see me during the week. And again, if ever he thinks, wow, you know, she's not giving me enough time, and he decides to leave, well, then I love him and I bless him, and that's a gift from God as well. In fact, I feel like it's none of my business whether he stays or goes. The ego would argue for both sides at different times, right? Either I need him or he's in my way. So the best thing for me to do is just to make it none of my business. So, and yeah, it would be the same for the beloved daughter as well, if she ever, you know, but she was raised with this, so she's a little more used to it. I mean, even though I haven't been meditating all these years, I've been spending just as much time in contemplation, right? So she's used to it. Hey, Jamie. She's the one gets annoyed the most. She'll start hitting me with her paw. She wants me to quit meditating and take her for a walk. So. And the noise-canceling headphones don't stop that. I did get her a doggy door, though. That's one of the other things we got, so that she can go in and out to the backyard while I meditate, and that helps. Since I've gotten the doggy door, that's been a big help. But if I meditate too long, she'll make herself known, you know, too long in her opinion. Yeah, and I just have to learn to ignore her. I just ignore her. That's what I do. I ignore her. All right, so we've done about a minute over. So what I'm going to do now is just take a little pause in order to stop the 7 steps to awakening.